Good morning. Good morning to everybody. Welcome. Great to see everybody. I'd just like to ask you at the beginning if you could turn off your phones, please, so that we get that out of the way. I'd also like to thank our sponsor for the whole of the 2023 academic year. The Shirim are given Le'ilu Nishmois Brana Bas Brandits. Anzelik ben Kalman Aleim Asholem. We're very grateful for that that sponsorship. One other housekeeping point, there were a couple of people last week that asked me if my book was available, so I brought a couple of copies in case anyone wants today. Baruch Hashem, we got a message from America that the official launch date for the book was May the 8th, which was a couple of days ago, and apparently they've all gone. Which is amazing. There's some left in the stores, but Amazon is saying, please send us more, so we've had to print more. So that's a good sign, I think, that people are buying it, reading it, enjoying it, spreading it, and hopefully that will be helpful to people. Now, last week we started off a series talking about objectivity and subjectivity in halakha. And we split up the halachic process, based on Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's Zeket Tzadik Livrachat, into two. Psak and psika. Psika, we said, was the people-facing aspect of it, applying the halakha to the individual case, and Rav Aaron wanted to argue there's a significant element of subjectivity in that. Not total, but significant. Psak, on the other hand, is formulating the abstract concepts. That is surely much more objective. Yes, there's analysis, and the analysis depends on the style of analysis and the type of posek, but really the subject matter, the raw material, isn't it fairly objective? So what I want to do with you for the next 2 weeks, I think we're going to have some fun, especially today, but maybe even more next week, although I'm going to England for Shabbos, so I don't know if it'll be so much fun in between. Maybe it'll be amazing, but we'll see. I'd like to deal with a couple of topics where baked in, built into the actual subject matter is a very interesting subjectivity. And the one we're going to start with today is Beged Ish. Now, I've never given a shiur really in depth on Beged Ish. And as I started getting into this over the last week, I realized that this is a massive topic. It's highly complex. We'll have our work cut out for us to try and put it across in a way which makes sense and is structured. I'll do my very best. Next week, I want to focus on the specific issue of Beged Ish and trousers or pants, especially for women, because that's more complicated still even than this week. But we'll leave that for next week. I won't really talk about that this week. But I want to look at the issue of cross-dressing. I'll refer you to interesting sources. First of all, there's a great article by Rav Yonah Rabinovich and Rav Nathaniel Wiederblank in the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society. I refer to that. That's very clear, just in the last issue. But I also find, and I really enjoy like this when this happens, although it happens to be 5 minutes before Shabbos, which was incredibly frustrating, I found an entire doctoral thesis on the issue of Beged Ish. I brought it at the bottom here. Of Svi Sinensky wrote a thesis last year for YU on Lo Yilvash as a case study in halachic conceptions of masculinity. And when I found this 5 minutes before Shabbos, I just shoved paper into my machine, pressed print, and ran out to shul and hoped for the best. And I did have a great time on Shabbos reading that, really fascinating in terms of the gender studies angle, and there's a lot going on there. So I did draw a little bit from that too. It's well worth a read, and it's available for download together with lots of other amazing doctoral theses. But let's get straight in. Number one. Here's the pasuk, and it's not what it seems to be. Just one pasuk in the Torah. Lo yihye chli geber al isha. So there shouldn't be a kli. Now, what's a kli? A utensil, an accoutrement, something of a geber. There shouldn't be that on a woman. Velo yilbash geber, and a man may not wear simlat isha, the dress of a woman. Ki, now it's always very interesting when a mitzvah has a ki in it, because there's a reason built in. It doesn't say don't eat pigs, ki. It just says don't eat pigs. But here it says ki, because to'avat Hashem Elokecha kol oseh. Anyone who does these things is a to'eva. We'll get back to the word to'eva soon. But the first thing you see is that these two sides of the pasuk, what a woman can do and what a man can do, are not symmetrical. First of all, with a woman, he uses the word kli. It doesn't say a piece of clothing, so maybe that's broader. Secondly, it's not active. It doesn't say a woman may not wear. It says there may not be upon a woman any. That sounds more, maybe broader. Then he also uses the word gever, which is a popular word in modern Hebrew, gever. But what does he mean here? Why doesn't he say ish? Why doesn't he say lo yekli ish al isha? That would make more sense, because in the man's it says simlat isha. So why doesn't he say kli ish? Gever maybe has connotations of masculinity. Yeah, not just an ish, but a gever. Okay? And then it says this simla, that your man cannot wear a woman's dress. What does that include? And then it gets into the to'eva, which we'll talk about in a minute. Now, Rashi takes a very clear stand on this, and we'll see where Rashi's coming from in a minute. He focuses a lot on the key. Look at Rashi number two. Lo yekli gever al isha. Why? Why is this a problem that a woman can't wear a male's kli? She'tehei doimele ish, because she's trying to look like a man. Kedei, so that she'telech bein anashim, she can mix with men. She'll get into the men's only side of the whatever it is. She'ein zo'ela l'shem niyuf, because she wants to have sexual connections with the men, and she won't get in if she's dressed like a woman, but if she's dressed like a man, they'll let her in, and then when she's in, she'll say, I'm really a woman, and dot, 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 the rest is whatever it is. There's a lot read into that. It's only a problem if she's doing it to look like a man, and only if she's doing that in order to have illicit relations with other men. Interesting. No, she's just trying to get through the guards, and then she'll, you know, whatever. And then Rashi, lo yilbash gever simlat isha, a man might not wear a woman's dress. Leilech v'leishet bein ha'anoshim. He's trying to get in looking like a woman so he can get in the women's side. Interesting, there's a debate. Would a man dress up as a woman so he could have a relationship with another man? That's also a very interesting discussion, okay, which is not for right now. But then Rashi gives a davar acher on the men's side of things. An alternative explanation for men's prohibitions to cross-dress is shelo yashis se'ar ha'erva. He may not shave off his body hair. Here he's not dressing up like anything. Shaving off his body hair, his pubic hair, says Sitzi Chachamim, Rotzalama derech ha'nashim b'kach. Because that's a thing that only women do. He can't do that. V'se'ar shel beit ha'shechi, or his underarm hair. Presumably again, because that's a thing that only women do. So here there seems to be a further prohibition for a man, which is more objective. I don't care why you're doing it, and I don't care if you're wearing something, but just doing this activity is essentially, intrinsically effeminate. You can't do that, okay? Ki to'eva, why is it, what's the to'eva? Says that, and the Rashi goes out of his way. Lo asra Torah ele levush hamevi, sorry, lidei to'eva. The only prohibition here is wearing clothing that is going to bring you to to'eva, to something which is highly repugnant, repulsive. Okay, that's also very important. We'll see, what if I need to put my wife's coat on to run out to the car because it's pouring with rain? And that's not l'shem to'eva. What if I need a nice pair of cozy slippers and the only ones I can find are women's slippers? It's going to be the other way around, because I'm not going to fit into my wife's coat. She's going to fit into mine. But we'll see. What about all of these things? How objective and subject is it? Is it restricted to clothing? So that already, I think, whets our appetite as to something exciting and interesting coming ahead. Okay. I brought you Rabbeinu Bachya because he goes even further. Lo yikli gever al isha. Mana hakosav kli zayin. The posuk actually prevents her from carrying a sword. Now, we had a whole discussion about this when we talked about women in the IDF. There are two shirim on my website on women in the IDF, and they're also on the OU site with the videos. I'm not going to get into women and weapon carrying in a big way today, but a woman's not allowed to carry a sword. Mina isha, a woman's not allowed that. Kedei shelo teitzei lemilchama, because we don't want her to go out to war. Why? Why don't we want to go out to war? Ve'yesipa leznut, because it's going to be a big party out there. She's going to be a woman surrounded by a load of men, and it's going to be an unhealthy environment in terms of morality. V'kena ish, and so to a man, he says, im yilbash simlat isha, if a man wants to wear a woman's dress, she yitarev im anashim, he wants to mix with women, ki zeh to'aretzim, because that's the to'eva. And the Chazal also darshened, ki to'at Hashem elokecha, davah hamebi didei to'eva. He's also stressing that this is very contextual. This is also because you have bad intentions. The Chizkuni is a teaser for next week. The Chizkuni takes a separate approach, which is no. This is designed to prevent gender fluidity, which is a very interesting concept in our own times. Look what he says: Lefishehu gnai upritzus. It's just completely inappropriate for a man to wear a woman's clothing or a woman to wear a man's. Ulekachlo nakle Yael cherev, and we'll see soon. That's why Yael, when she killed Sisera, what did she kill him with? A tent peg. Why not pick up a sword? There must have been a sword there. First of all, it's a battle. There's soldiers all over. Secondly, he's lying down to sleep. Didn't he have a sword? Pick up his sword, like David HaMelech does with Goliath. Chop off his head. No, she picks up a tent peg. She didn't pick up a sword or a spear. She picks up a hammer and a tent peg. To get put it through his head. Okay, we'll see why that is in a minute. Beniskema parsha zokan, and this is brought here. Shidava lemale beinyani hanoch, because the whole Torah is talking about things to do with war here. And look at what he says now. This might make you bristle a little bit, but we'll get back to it next week. Why should a woman not be doing these things? Ve'isha lo nivret rak lahakim zera, because women are meant to be having babies, not chopping off men's heads in war, okay? Ve'im teitel imilchamar, and if she goes off to war or to fight, targil es atzmah lidei znut, again she'll get into bad ways, v'chein im yilbash geva simlat isha, etc. This more essentialist definition. The reason this mitzvah is here, because men are meant to be like this, and women are meant to be like this, we'll see this became a very big approach to this mitzvah in the 20th century. When the Rabbanim were confronting feminism. In the Middle Ages, nobody's interested in feminism. In the Middle Ages, we'll see that the rabbis are much more concerned about men doing stuff to have sexual thrills. In the 20th century, the focus is much more on women, that women can't be doing this because there have to be assigned women's roles. And in the 21st century, of course, the whole issue of gender fluidity is very interesting. There's now an understanding that lots of people in some ways could go in either direction on certain gender issues. So maybe the Torah here is laying down, we'll talk about this next week, that this is going to help you define yourself. If you're anatomically male, you dress like a man. If you're anatomically female, you dress like a woman. But there's more to it than that. We'll get back to that next week. Okay, but for now, we're going to put that to one side. Just what is a ta'eva? So I couldn't resist giving you this. It's a little bit of an excursus. So an abomination. I happen to not like that word because I never use it. I have a pet peeve. I don't like ever translating Hebrew words into words that I don't use in English because it then just makes them seem irrelevant. And I tell that to my students. A classic, I say to them, what does tzedek mean? And almost to us, every single one says, righteousness. I said, come on. When is the last time you ever used the word righteousness? If you translate it in a word which is meaningless to you, you're basically saying Judaism is meaningless to me. It's just like translated in ways which I don't relate to. So I never walked into a shop and was, you know, said this is an abomination. It also has to me Christian overtones. It almost sounds like, you know, Northern Irish Protestant overtones, an abomination kind of thing. But maybe that's just me. There are all sorts of other words. I brought down every word that Rav Aryeh Kaplan uses to translate this. Interestingly, he translates it many, many different ways. He uses the word taboo, perversion, offensive, revolting, repulsive, repugnant, vile. I think you get the point. However, it's worth stressing that there are a number of mitzvot in the Torah which this word is associated with. And I listed them here because I think its context is important. And many of them have nothing to do with sexuality at all. Sacrificing an animal with a blemish on it is called a to'eva. Bringing idols generally is called a to'eva, to idolatry. Occult and magical practices are called a to'eva. Remarrying one's first wife after she's remarried someone else in between is called a to'eva. A person who cheats in business is called a to'eva. But it's interesting that in every one of these cases, it isn't the person who's a to'eva, It's the act or the product. If you do this, that becomes a Tu'eva. If you act like this, the act is a Tu'eva, with one exception. In only one mitzvah does the Torah say, you're a Tu'eva. And that's if you cheat in business. It's very interesting. That's the one thing where the Torah actually stresses the person themselves becomes, in a sense, this Tu'eva. So I just brought that to try and get a little bit of context. Either way, it's something pretty bad. It's something very negative. And this is a word used for cross-dressing. Let's go over to page 3. Let's look at number 7. What about the Targumim? The Targumim, which were the official Aramaic translations, reveal, they're very old, and they reveal a certain approach on this. Look at number 7. Here's, let's start with Unklus, relatively safe ground. How does he translate this? Lo yehe tikun zayin degever al ita. A woman may not have an accoutrement of a man's sword. Again, he stresses the weapon. The law yitkan gever b'tikuni isha, and a man should not dress himself up in the accoutrements of a woman. Interesting, the word tikun used there twice. Arei merachak kadam Hashem elokecha kol avedein, because at this distance is anyone who does this from Hashem. So he focuses for the women on sword, for the men on general women's accessories, accoutrements, etc. The Targum Yonason is actually more interesting. Look at number 8. The Targum Yonason, which is not probably Yonason ben Uzziel. The Gemara says that the parish of Yonason ben Uzziel on Nach, or the Targum Yonason on Nach, I should say, was written by Yonason ben Uzziel, who was a student of Hillel. Okay? But he doesn't say that about the Targum on Chumash. So we'll have a look here. Lo yehe gulyen de tzitzit utfilin. A woman may not be wearing garments of tzitzit or tefillin, dehinun tikunei gaver alita, because these are men's clothing. Very interesting, a stand on tzitzit and tefillin. Now that's actually not the way that the Gemara paskens, and it's not the way that the Rambam paskens. There are reasons why we strongly discourage women from wearing certainly tefillin and also tzitzit, but it's not because of Begin Isha. Or Begit Ish in this case, but the Targum Yonason takes that line that tzitzit and tefillin are intrinsically Begit Ish. Okay? The Loisapeh gather, and a man may not shave, he going down the shaving route. What may he not shave? Beishechya, his underarm. Iryate, his private parts. Ube anpoy, or even his face. Lischama heich nasha, because then he's going to look like a woman. You're not allowed to shave. It's not here dealing with the issue of a razor. You can't use a razor as a separate prohibition in the Torah. But you could shave with scissors, or you could shave with depilatory cream. Apparently the Targum Yonason says you can't shave at all because you look like a woman, and then it says because these things distance you from Hashem. The Targum Yonason on Navi takes a different approach. And by the way, I brought you in the footnote. This is used by the Aruch in the Middle Ages as a proof that the two Targumim are not written by the same people. It's not just a modern academic argument. It's even in the Rishonim, because he says they say different things. But what does it say about Ya'el? Look at number 9. Tafta Ya'el. How great was Ya'el? Itat Chever Sham Shalma, the wife of Chever the Shulamite. Dikaima, because she fulfilled Madikasiv B'Sefer writer, what it says in the Torah, the Moshe of Moshe, lo yehe tikun zayin degaval itetava lo yitkan gavav betikune itetah. That women may not wear men's things, and men may not wear women's things. Why? But rather, yada lesichta oshita, she stretched out her hand to find a peg, v'yamina, and in her right hand, la'ar zapta, she found a hammer, the nafchin of a smith, the limitva rashin, and she smashed his head, smashed the evil one, the anusim, and the violent one, machte le sisra, she smashed up sisra, and tabre reishi, she broke his head, patsa moiche, she smashed his skull, the avrat sichta betzide, and she put a pen peg through his temple. Now this is very interesting, because what, according to Chazal, had Yael just been doing before that? Seducing him. It's quite clear from the Shirat Devorah, this is how Chazal understand it, she didn't just give him milk. That's the kind of, the Beis Yaakov high school version of it. She actually sexually seduced him 7 times, even though she's married to another man, in order to tire him out so that she could then kill him. So this is fascinating. Beged Ish is apparently prohibited in case people get into sexually questionable circumstances. Here's a woman that just slept with a man who's not her husband 7 times, justifiably, say Chazal, because it was an Aveira Lishma. It was an Aveira done Lashem Shamayim, which opens up a whole can of worms. What does that mean? When can you do an Aveira Lishma? Apparently Yael, she's praised, she's like Sarah, she's like Raquel. But she's just seduced this man, and therefore that wasn't a halakhic issue as much. But is she going to pick up a sword? No, chas v'chalom, chas v'chalom. She's not going to pick up a sword and a spear, she's going to pick up a tent peg and a hammer. Even Yael had a limit, but it's fascinating that the limit was on this. It shows even more how firm they are on this issue. She wouldn't, God forbid, have picked up a sword. She picked up a tent peg. When we called our daughter Yael, my wife, and I said, we're not going to go camping with her, just in case. And we've lived up to that ever since. Okay, fine. That's the Targum. Let's have a look at the Gemara. This is when it starts to get a little bit harder. How does the Gemara understand Beged Isha? So number 10. The main sugi is in Nazir. And understandably, Nazir is dealing with a man or a woman who has said that they're not going to shave their head. So it's dealing a lot with shaving and a lot with hair. If you want to get into aspects of hair and what hair represents, Nazir is a good place to start. It says Detanya, because it says in a Braisa, Lo yekli gevel isha. My Talmud Gomer, what is the Torah telling us? If it's just saying that a man can't wear a woman's dress, the isha simlat ish, or a woman wear a man's dress, interestingly, he puts both equally in clothing, man's clothing, but doesn't it then say this is a to'eva? That ain't can to'eva. And there's no to'eva with my wife putting on my coat or wearing my slippers. So he can't just be talking about dressing in the other way. Ella, rather, this is the first opinion of the Gemara, Shelo yilbash ish simlat isha v'yeshe ben anashim. A man like Rashi. Rashi's reflecting this opinion, what we've got to call the Tanakama, the first opinion. A man can't dress as a woman so he can sit with the women. V'isha simlat ish v'teshe ben anashim. So the view of the Tanakama, let's get this clear, the first view of the Tana here is, it's all about context. It's about why you're doing it. What's your intention? Are you dressing this way so that ... That's opinion number one, which Rashi, again, seemed clearly to take. But the Gemara continues. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, no, it's not about that. There's objective prohibitions here. Minayin shelo teitzei ish b'kli zayin l'milchama. How do we know that a woman is not allowed to go out with a kli zayin l'milchama, with a sword to war? Tamad lo lo yeh kli geva al isha. What does it mean? A man cannot wear a woman's clothing. So the difference between these two opinions is, the first opinion says, it's all contextual. Why are you doing this? What is your intention? If your intention is good, it's fine. If your intention is bad, it's not. Of course, we're going to have to ask, how do we know what people's intention is? We're going to see Tosfos says, we don't. God knows. And therefore, it's between them and God. But it's interesting.
Intention that had she taken the sword, wouldn't have been the
same. Interesting. Yeah. Well, what would you have thought about Yael? Right. You think she was doing it in order to somehow look like a man so that she can? Interesting point there. Why, according to the first view, would Yael have needed to take a tent peg? I understand, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it's objective. It's not about your intentions. It's about, this is intrinsically masculine. This is intrinsically feminine. Yes, then. No, it's not the act. Killing him was a mitzvah gedoyla. Killing him was fine. Haraya, she killed him with a tent peg and that was great. It was the carrying of the sword that would have been a problem. It's not that she killed him. No, she killed him was a mitzvah. By the way, what does this mean? A woman may not go out with a kli zayin l'milchama. There are two ways you can read this. A woman may not go out with a kli zayin to war, meaning the problem is she's going to the army. Or a woman may not go out with a Klizayin al-Milchama, with the war weapon. It's not about the army, it's about the weapon. You see, you could read it both ways. Rav Moshe in a tshuva, he was asked in the 60s, must have been the 70s actually, by someone in Gush Etzion, actually, he writes this from Gush Etzion, a tshuva was relayed to him by his grandson, Rav Shata Rappaport. Can a woman carry a revolver, a pistol? I don't think they call them revolvers anymore. Pistol, okay, in order to, for self-defense, as she's walking around. So Rav Moshe answers yes. Obviously, the pikuach nefesh angle is incredibly important. But even without that, he said, the prohibition is a klizayin milchama, not a weapon for personal protection. A pistol today is the equivalent of having like a knife, like in the old days they would have had. That's not the same as a sword. So Kli Zayin HaMilchama would be carrying one of those enormous kind of machine gun things that people, the soldiers carry, as opposed to a pistol, which is a Kli Zayin, you know, for personal protection. Yes. Yeah, we'll get to that. A few years ago, I decided to investigate getting a gun because we moved to Gush Etzion. So my children persuaded me that I was more likely to shoot myself in the foot than anybody else that needed it. So they persuaded me not. But when I went to one of these lessons, classes as to, you know, how to use a gun and what kind of gun to get. So there was a woman there that said, can I buy a little gun that I can put inside my stocking? So the guy looked at him and says, ladies, this is not James Bond here. This is for real. Okay. So okay, I think she had this idea, a little tiny silver pistol that she's going to pull out and shoot somebody. Whatever. That's not for now. So you see two opinions there. Intention-oriented, subjective, or objective. Let's go over the page. Have a look, please, at number 12. Let's leave it at 11 for now. Rashi understands very much like Unkelus that it's about the weapon. But let's look at two more bits of this Gemara because they're going to be necessary to get our heads straight on this. Number 12. So we've had the first part. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan is very important here. Hamar de beta shechi ubeta erva. A man who shaves his body hair, underarm, pubic hair, etc. Loike. Loike is code word for mitzvah doraita. He gets malchus. This is an issa min haTorah. Because you can't do feminine things. Meisvei, the Gemara says, is that true? Don't we have a source that says, Havarat Seir, Einu mi divrei Torah, Ele mi divrei Sofrim? Shaving body hair for a man is rabbinic. It's not a Torah prohibition. So the Gemara says, you're right, it's a machlokas. And Rabbi Yochanan takes the strict view. Who da amaki tana ki haitan? No, he goes like the other tana, the tanya, hamadha bita shekhla bita erve, harize oidha mishum, lo yil bashke vesim latishim. Fine. So we see there's machlokas. Is it Doraisa or is it the Rabbanon to shave body hair? We'll see which way the Rambam and others go on that. Yes. No, he doesn't talk about facial hair here. That was in the Targum Yonason. We don't seem to go in that direction. The facial hair is not included here. Yeah.
In Nazir, it also talks about the Matura, about the...
Yes.
They have to shave
it. Yes, they do. But they're not shaving it for any purpose which is effeminate. They're shaving because the Torah says they have to shave it. So even if it was prohibited, maybe you'd say... Right, exactly. Exactly. Last source in Nazir, number 13. Very interesting. Boy minei Rav mi Rabbi Chiya. Rav asked Rabbi Chiya, Mao legaleach. What about shaving the misbarayim bet ha-shechi? What about using scissors? Is that okay to shave body hair? Again, when I say body hair, I mean underarm and private parts. Amalei, he said to him, Asur. It's not allowed. Amalei says, but what about the following case? The ha-kegadel. What if it becomes uncomfortable? This is going to be very important soon. Rashi says, ke-metsa'ar lei le-inish. It's causing him discomfort. So Amalei, he says, don't worry about it. Barpachti, that's a praiseworthy phrase. You're a Talmid Chacham, that's a great question. He says, don't worry. Zman yeshlo, the hair has a kind of a shelf life to it. Because manchehu gadol noisha, and when it gets to the level, to the length that it will be uncomfortable, it falls out by itself. So you don't have to worry about it, because it's going to go away. Now, the Rishonim take this to mean that if it's not going to go away automatically, then he would have been allowed to shave it. Which is very interesting. I don't know whether I can see some skeptical faces in the medical establishment here as to whether, you know, hair... The truth is, hair does stop growing at a certain point. Otherwise, everybody would look like a gorilla eventually, okay? But it goes wavy. Okay, fine. I'm not getting into all the... I'm not a medical person. But here, what we're getting from this is it sounds like you're right. If it didn't fall out by itself, you would have been allowed to shave it because it's uncomfortable. Well, is this only according to the view that it's rabbinic? Okay, I get that. Because drabonons often can be waived when there's a health need that's not pikuach nefesh. But if this is according to the view that it's d'oraita not to shave your hair off, how come discomfort would allow that? You can't normally break a Torah mitzvah because you're in discomfort. If it's a life-threatening problem, yes. So we'll see that plays into the issue of intention later. Next two sources, then we can get into more halachic issues. Number 14 to the Rishon. Number 14, Igor in Shabbos. Hanoitil mali pi hazug b'Shabbos. If you cut hair with scissors on Shabbos, enough to fill the scissors, chayav. Then you have to bring a korban. That's a breach of Shabbos. With a shear, it requires a korban. How many hairs is that? Shayim. Two hairs, fine. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, acha, one hair. What, even one hair with scissors, you're right, you have to bring a korban. It's a breach of Shabbos on that level. Umoidim chachamim, but everybody agrees, the rabbis agree, the Rabbi Eliezer, the malakid levana bitocha shchoren, that if you were to cut a white hair from black hairs, everybody agrees that one is chashuv, one is enough. Sha'afilu achat chayv, even one is liable for a korban. V'davazeh af b'chol osa. Why? Because even on a weekday, this is not allowed. Not just on Shabbos. Mishum shene'emar, la'yilbash gevesim lat isha. A man is not allowed to pluck a white hair, apparently, from the black hairs, because it's effeminate. So we're going to have to ask, well, what if men do this all the time now? What if men tweeze their eyebrows and have manicures and pedicures and who knows what other kind of cures? Is this all, you know, dependent on the times? We'll see. Didn't sound like it. But we'll, what's that?
Coloring your hair.
We'll talk about all of that.
This is not allowed because it is
effeminate.
Feminine,
yes.
But it's not allowed because of Shabbat.
No, Shabbat is for sure not allowed. But even on the weekday, you're not allowed to pluck one hair out. So that intrinsic prohibition makes one hair even more important on Shabbat. So if on Shabbat you're plucking out a white hair, so that's even worse than plucking out a black hair. You're not allowed to pluck out any hairs on Shabbat. We were only talking about the Korban, but this is an interesting idea in Yo Yilash. And the final source here from the Gemara, number 15. Amemar Umar Zutra Rav Ashi Hava Yasvi. So these three rabbis were sitting together. Eisilu Kamehu Barada. What's Barada? Barada. They brought some kind of face lotion. So the Gemara on that page says, I didn't bring you the Gemara, Barada is one-third aloe, one-third myrtle, and one-third violet. So I'd say it's basically a scented face scrub. Okay? They brought it to the rabbis. Ameimar and Rav Ashi, Marshall. Ameimar and Rav Ashi washed their face with it. This is on Shabbos. Marzutra loy masha. Razutra refused. So Amrole, they said to him, Loy sava lamar lahada amar Rav Cheshis barda shari. Don't you hold in Hilchos Shabbos that this is allowed to wash your face? We're not worried about, you know, pulling out hairs. You couldn't wash your face on Shabbos. What's your problem in Hilchos Shabbos? So amar lahu Rav Mordechai. Rav Mordechai was sitting nearby, and he said to these rabbis, Bar minei demar, don't even start up with him on this. He's not even involved in this discussion. The afilu b'chol nami lo svirale, because it's nothing to do with Shabbos. He won't use this even on a weekday because it's effeminate. He won't scrub his face with violet, aloe, and what was the other thing? Myrtle face scrub. Savala, because he holds ki hadatanya megarer adam gildei tsoa. What if a person has like encrusted soa, it sounds pretty unpleasant, some kind of excrement or refuse on his face, the gilde makar or scabs on his face, sha'al basar, he can scrape them off, bishvil tsaro, if they upset him, or if they're painful, the im bishvil yafois, but if he wants just to look nice, asur, he's not allowed to. Marzutra held that if a man looks dirty, then that's what a man should look like. Okay? Women want to look clean and scrubbed, but men, you look like a man. Okay? So he wouldn't use it even on a weekday, and therefore that's why he didn't use it on Shabbos. But what about the other rabbis? They're scrubbing their face with violet face scrub on Shabbos, and certainly on a weekday. The inhu commands for it. So what do they hold like? Kihadatani, they hold like the following. Roichitz adam panav yadav araglav. A man has to scrub his face, wash his face, his feet, his hands. B'chol yom, every day, bishvil kono. Because of, he's standing before God. Mishum shinema, kol pal Hashem lema'anehu. All the actions of God are for his own kavod, as it were. And therefore, I'm a tzelem elokim, I have to look nice. I'm not doing it to be effeminate, I'm doing it because it's a mitzvah to be well presented. Marzutra Avri felt, no, Adkan, I'm not going to do to potentially break a Torah mitzvah and be effeminate. No, I'm not going to do that. They did, which is it. They didn't say it's not effeminate, interestingly. They said, even if it is, it's a mitzvah. I'm doing it for a mitzvah reason, not for that reason, which is fancy.
Soap considered
a lotion? Is what, sorry?
So, fine.
So we'll see soon how all of this is relevant today. Well, we'll get into soap. They didn't have soap in those days. This was their soap. This was their kind of soap, this scrub. We'll get into today. We've got a long way to go. Yeah?
Does it make a difference whether you do it or someone does it for
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think so. It's about you doing, meaning if you had your hair shaved or your eyebrows tweezed by someone else, it's about you doing something effeminate. I don't think so. Okay, now, what's the halachic say? Let's go. Let's do this quite quickly. The Rambam. What is the Rambam rule like? So number 16, the Rambam appears to rule that I don't care about your intention. But I do care about a factor that we haven't even seen yet, which is what is considered feminine and what is considered masculine. The Gemara didn't even address that. So there's two different angles of subjectivity in this shir. One is, what is your intention when doing this? Is it important or not important? Is it being done for immoral reasons or just for other reasons? And a separate element of subjectivity is, how do we even classify what's considered masculine and what's considered feminine? Look what the Rambam says. Number 16. A woman may not wear the jewelry, the accoutrements of a man. She can't put a turban on like a man's turban, or cover a man's hat, or tilva shirion, or put on armor. She can't wear armor. Or anything like that. Or she can't have a man's haircut. Again, what's called a man's haircut? We'll see in a minute. The lo yada ish ad isha, and a man may not wear women's accoutrements. Kagan sheyilbash bigdei tzivonim, he can't wear colored clothes. V'chali zahav, and bracelets of gold. And here's the key. He adds this in now. B'makam she'ein loishin oisam hakelim, ve'ein mesimim oisah hachali, ela noshim. But that's only in a place where the colored clothes and the bracelets are women's, are worn by women. Hakol keminhag hamadina. And it all depends on what your local minhag is. So we're going to have to ask, who's minhag? Religious Jews minhag? Or the local non-Jewish population minhag? We're going to see. Everything's according to the minhag. Isha ada adi isha, and if a man decides to wear women's actual feminine clothes, v'isha she'adatai adi ish, look, it's midoraita. And then he says, hamalakit sa'arot levanoit, if you pluck out white hairs, v'tach hashchayres, v'rosho, or mezikno, she'lakit sa'ara achad, once he plucks out one hair, look, it's doraita. V'pnesha ada adi isha, because he's doing something effeminate. V'chem in savasaru, if he dyes his hair shachor black, m'sheyitza se'ar levana, as soon as he dyes one white hair, look. Now, is that also dependent on the Minhag Medina, or is that, no, that's absolute. Or does that go back on what he said before? Interestingly, he paskens that on the shaving body hair, he paskens on the Drabonon side, which is interesting, which is definitely going to give him more room for maneuver when it comes to people who have discomfort. I didn't bring you that here, I brought it later in the Shulchan Aruch. But he doesn't say anything here about so that you are going to do something immoral. He doesn't say you can't wear these clothes because you look like a woman and you're mixed with the women, or you look like a man. It sounds like he's paskening like Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov, not like the Tana Kama. Although that's a major debate. 18 and 19, one is the Kesef Mishnah in 18, which says he's obviously paskening like Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov. It's not dependent on your intention. But 19, which is Agos Maimonides, says he's obviously paskening like the Tana Kama, which is interesting how they can't decide which way he's paskening, because if he's paskening like the Tana Kama, intention is now much more relevant. Now, I brought you in number 17, the Rambam in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. He has an interesting take here. He says that there is not just a concern here about men mixing with women or women mixing with men. There are other concerns, and he brings two other things. He says, number one, sometimes some people cross-dress for idolatrous practices. It's one of the things that people get into, or for kind of occult practices. There's some weird stuff going on out there. And he says, and you know, I've read all these books on this, and it's all very nasty. It's interesting, because the Rambam says in the Halacha, you're not allowed to read books about idolatry. And in the Moreh Nevuchim, he says, don't worry, I've read every book about every idolatry. I know what I'm talking about. So it obviously depends on who you are. Okay. But then he also says, and let's face it, men especially do this kind of thing for their own sexual thrills, which has nothing to do with them wanting to mix with anybody. They do it intrinsically because it arouses them in some way, which is very interesting, because he's saying, therefore, even according to Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov, where it doesn't matter what your intention is, the reason it's intrinsically prohibited is because you're not doing it for good reasons. And this, of course, I'm not getting into a whole discussion about why people cross-dress. You can research that on your own, just watch out what websites you decide to research it on. You'll see that this is a very major issue, especially with men. Now, I'm not into gender studies. I don't know much about that. But I think the reason that men sometimes dress up as women is rather different, or the reasons than why women dress up as men. And with men, I think the sexual angle is very much more prominent. And Rambam brings it down here. So it's not just about mixing. And the Shulchan Aruch basically takes the view of the Rambam. And the Ramah, you know, adds in, but it all depends on the cultural norms. So let's talk about those cultural norms. What does that mean? It depends on the cultural norms. So have a look at a Gemara that we didn't bring before. Number 21, two Gemaras. Number 21. Hahude ischayiv nagde kami de Rav Ami. There was this man who had to be whipped, who they brought down in front of Rav Ami. He'd done something wrong. Igle beis hashechi, they took off his shirt, ready to give him his punishment, and they saw his underarm, chazye de lo megalech, they saw he had not shaved his underarm. So amalahon Rabbi Ami, so Rabbi Ami turned around to them and said, okay, shavku, let's find a different way of punishing this guy. Let's not whip him, why not? Din man chevrei hu. He's obviously one of the chaverim. Who were the chaverim? Who was a chaver? Someone chashev. Okay, even chaverim do averas, but he says, I see from the fact that he doesn't shave under his arm that he's one of the chaverim. And therefore we have to find a different way of punishing him, not something so, you know, demeaning as whipping him. So what's the case here? This guy didn't shave under his arm. Does that mean that everybody else did? But now that I saw, which means it sounds objective, meaning I don't care that everybody else does. That doesn't make it right. Even if all the other men shave under their arms, the fact that this guy doesn't shows that he's frum. Then therefore we'll give him a different punishment, which sounds like it's more objective. Or are we going to read it another way, which we'll see in a minute. And the source number 22, which I think you'll really enjoy, is a man allowed to look in a mirror? Yes or no? See? Don't worry, we'll say yes in the end. It's fine. Number 22. Hamistapa min anochri, somebody who's having a haircut by a non-Jewish barber. Harizeroi Bamara. Not only can he, but he should have a mirror in front of him. Minakusi, if it's from one of the Kutin, the Samaritans, Enaroi Bamara. We don't have to worry about it. By the way, what's the mirror going to do? What are we worried about? When are the guy's going to cut his throat? So the Gemara there says, you think he's going to cut his payas off? So then a Kuti would be a problem as well. By the way, you know, when I lived in England, call me, you know, old-fashioned, but when I went to the barber and told them what I wanted, they used to do that. I went to the barber in Israel, and I said, number two, please. So he shaves all my, starts with my hair, and I said to him, is this number two? So he said, no. This is number one and a half. I said, but I asked for number two. He said, yeah, but it didn't bring enough off. It didn't cut enough off. So I decided to do one and a half. So I said, first of all, that's an interesting way of doing business. And I said, yeah, but you know, there are halachas. He said, don't worry. He said, I asked a shayla. One and a half is fine. Okay, fine. I'm going to argue with him. My butcher's the time. My barber's the time of Chochem. I once only in this one of these only in Israel moments, and no one ever told me that in London. I once went into a bakery in Israel, and I said, "Do you have any bread which is mazonot, like mazonos bread, which is a whole different like discussion?" So there's a guy standing there. I don't know. You can't tell from the way someone looked, but he wasn't dressed like a kind of frum dutty guy. He looked like, you know, a guy wasn't in a particularly frum place. He had a ponytail, whatever, standing there. I know you can't tell, etc. But his eyes lit up, and he said, he brought me over. He said, according to the Sfaradim, this is Mazonos, but only on a Shabbos, and according to the Ashkenaz, gives me a whole shear. It's amazing. Shkayach. So like, I don't even need to go to yeshiva. I can get my shear in Burmans. Yes. Okay, so let's get into this. Why can't I look in the mirror? We're worried about it. So hitiru lebeis Rebbe, she roin sheyuz cooking the malchus. But they allowed beis Rebbe, the house of Rebbe, they allowed because to look in the mirror because he was close to the government and they had to look really nice. By the way, I didn't mention the reason the mirror helps is not because you're going to catch them just as they're about to slit your throat, God forbid. That's a bit hit and miss. The mirror, says the Gemara, is if the guy sees that you're looking in a mirror, he'll know that you're obviously a government official because they're the only people that are allowed to look in a mirror. And therefore, he's going to think twice before he does any funny business with you, because he's going to get caught. If you're just a Joe Schmo, then he might not care. But if you're already part of the government, they're going to come looking for you, and he's going to get into trouble. Very interesting. What's the problem with a mirror? Yes?
Going back on that thing, 1.5 in the hair.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
Okay, I'll give us share another time on... You're not allowed to cut your payas too short, even with scissors. So the question is, how short is too short? So, it's all about the numbers. Number 2, number 3, number 1, number 1.5, and all that kind of stuff. Fine. Okay, fine. So, what do we do with this? How objective is it? So some posts can take the view, no, these are objective prohibitions. You can't shave your underarm. You can't look in a mirror. It's objectively effeminate. The RAN comes around and says no. Everything, every aspect of this whole sugya is entirely dependent on the norms of your society. Everything here, plucking out the hairs, looking in the mirror, dyeing the hair. He takes a very broad view on this. And he says, interestingly, what about this guy who was being whipped? So how do we read that? He says, no, you read the sugya wrong. It's not that everybody shaves their arms, but this guy doesn't, and therefore everyone is wrong and he's right. Everybody else shaves their arms, which makes it okay to shave under your arms if you're a man. And by the way, in the Muslim world, in the Middle Ages, there's a lot of literature on this, it was considered very appropriate for men to shave off body hair for hygiene reasons. It was very standard for men to do this. It was hot, they were very particular about personal hygiene. I don't think in the 12th century in Northern Europe they were particularly bothered about personal hygiene, from what I understand. But in Egypt they for sure were. So men all very often shaved off their underarms, etc. So the RAN says it means that everybody else shaved, and therefore it was okay to shave. This guy didn't, because he's extra machmir. That's what they saw. Not that he's the only one who's doing it right. He's a chaver. A chaver is somebody extra. So he says, the fact is, if everybody does it, that makes it okay. So we'll see who's everybody. So let's go over to page number 7. What's the Shulchan Aruch say? Let's look at some bottom line here. And then we'll get into some practical cases. Shulchan Aruch says, number 24, Hamar be'ser be'sashechi. Even if you shave off your underarms with scissors, etc. How you makinus or makas mardus? It's midrabon, like we said, the Rambam paskins. The madvar amurim. When does that apply? The makam she'ein marim oisa ela nashim. Like the Rambam said, when only women shave, kidei shelo yitakin atzmo tikun nashim, because you don't want to be effeminate. Aval the makam she'mavirim oisa gam nashim. But in the place where men also shave, im hevrit ein makinotah. If you shave off, then we won't give you malchus. Well, that sounds a bit like it's not great, but we won't give you malchus. Jumps in the Ramah, following the RAN, and says, you know something? It's not just that we won't give you malchus. In the Rashi script, in number 24, third line, afilu lechatchila shari. It's actually completely fine. If it's in a place where all the men do this, it's completely fine. And there are people who are extra from that they don't do it. Okay, fine. Number 25. Lo isha ade isha. Woman can't wear men's accoutrements. Could go in shetasim barosha mitznevet or kava or tilba shirion. Can't wear armor and hats, etc. Jumps in the Ramah. Mimal boshei ha'ish. But that's only if it's a man's. Lafi minhag hamokam hahu. Everywhere the Ramah always adds in, it's always dependent on the local minhag, because he passes like the RAN. Number 26. Also le'ish listakel b'mara. The Shulchan Aruch says, a man may not look in a mirror. Mishum lo yilbash geber, because he's effeminate. Ela imke mishum refuah. Okay, if it's for refuah, it's fine. We saw that in the Gemara, if it's uncomfortable. Kagon shechoshesh be'enav. He's got pains in his eyes, he's trying to put eye ointment in, and he wants to put it in right. Of course, he says, that's fine. Because that far he does go, that it is based on intention. Or shema saper atzmo, or he's trying to shave himself. Or im mistapim in a ovid kachavim bein olavein, or if he's got a non-Jew shaving him. Kedeli rois adam choshev, he wants to look like a choshev person, mutili rois b'mare. But there's only limited reasons. But then the Ramah jumps in and says, no. V'yesh omrim hada osili rois b'mare, hainu dafke b'makam she'ein derech li rois b'mare rak nashim. It's a similar pattern. The Ramah is always jumping in for the Ashkenazim and saying, this is only a problem if it's effeminate in your society, subjectively. But in a place where men do look in mirrors, Gamke Bamara, where men have mirrors, Mutter, it's fine. It's absolutely fine. Not just for refuah, not just because you're worried about something else. And even if there are places where men don't look in mirrors, if you're doing it for a fu'ah, then it's fine. Okay? Now, interestingly, number 27, the last Shulchan Aruch here, also le'ish le'laket afilu, le'lkat la'afilu se'er achad lavan. A man is not allowed to pluck out even the white hair, mitoch ha'shchoyres, from the black hairs, v'shum lo yil bashgever. V'chein also le'ish le'tzvoa, and then a man is not allowed to dye, se'arot le'veinot she'iyu shchoyres, to be black hair. Afilu se'er achad, v'chein also le'ish le'istaka b'mara. The Ramah doesn't say anything here about, well, what if men do dye their hair? Or what if men do pluck out eyebrows? But he does refer you back to his psak on the mirrors, which is, it's all dependent on the minhag, from which many of the Meforshim understand that it is fine. So what do we have? What we have here is two approaches. One approach is the Beged Ish is somewhat objective, meaning we're not interested in your intentions specifically, but it does depend on the minhag of the makom for many things, but not for all things. There are some objective things that don't fall into the minhag. And there's another approach which is completely permissive, which says all of these things are subjective and depend on the minhag of the makom. Okay. So people have behaved in different ways on different items. When it comes to mirrors, do you know any Orthodox men that don't look in a mirror? I think that people have decided that looking in mirrors is absolutely fine.
Interesting. Someone that covers the mirrors.
That's a minhag. It's not based in halacha. Yeah. That is based on an idea that a person shouldn't be focused on their own physical beauty, etc., because it's not a time to think of the physical. Soloveitchik used to say that the modern day application of that is to remove photographs from the shiva house, which is not the minhag of most people. Very often you go to a minhag and dafka, they have photographs of the person when they were young, when they were middle, etc. But interesting, he felt that again, you shouldn't be focused on the... he said that's a din, that's not a din in Avelis, that's a din in the base Avel. There's a din of the Avel, and there's a din in the base Avel. He holds also that you're not allowed to say Shalom Aleichem to people in a shiva house, because often you see people in a shiva house, you haven't seen them for ages, you meet them in the shiva, oh, I haven't seen you for ages, so you have to do that outside. Because there's a din of a base Avel, even though you're not Avelim, you're in a base Avel. Anyway, that's not for now. How many people, just let me go on for a second, how many people need to do something to make it masculine or feminine? Does it have to do with the majority? What if it's a miut hamotsui? If it's a significant minority. So I brought down the Rabinovich and Rav Vida Blank asked all the YU Rosh Yeshiva. So they said, Rav Willig said, it just has to be a miut hamotsui. As long as there's a significant minority of men, let's say, who wear rings, who have pedicures. What's a significant minority? Usually in halacha, it's 10%. You know, when you're checking for bugs, if there's a significant minority that turns out to be infested, then you really have to check everything completely because there's a chazaka almost that it's infested. That's usually 10%. Rav Shechter said, no, that's not enough. The fact that 1 in 10 guys do this, but 9 in 10 guys consider it to be effeminate, says that's not enough. You have to have a bigger group. How big? Didn't say. It doesn't have to be the majority, but you get into this with wedding rings, you know? Should from men wear wedding rings? So in our society, I think in the younger generation, my son's generation, many of the guys wear rings. In my generation, less so. I asked my wife, which I thought was the politically correct thing to do, what would you like me to do, darling? And she said, I don't care. So I said, fine. So if you don't care, I don't care. And I don't need a wedding ring. Fine. A woman wears a wedding ring because the ring itself created the marriage. She walks around with the thing that created the kinyan. A man's wedding ring didn't create anything. But she might want him to wear it for whatever reasons. So let's have a look at some of these other issues. I brought you down in the bottom of page 8 some... Yeah.
Nowadays,
yeah,
a lot of people with their hair totally shaven off, men.
Okay, that's a separate problem, shaving the pants. Good? I don't know. It's a good question. People have their, totally bald. I don't know how they justify that in halacha. Yes.
The issue of the minhag
halacha. Yes. Okay, good. Let's look at that right now. Look at the source 28. That's exactly your point. Look at the Prisha, and then we'll get into some practical reasons in the last 7 or 8 minutes. The Prisha, number 28, says, Aval, But makom shema virim haseir hanashim, when men shave their seir, when shave their hair, body hair. So look what the preacher says. Nira, it seems, derat salama, what this means is, anashim goyim. Dekeven shenahog, nahog. Meaning, I don't care what religious Jews do, it's what the non-Jews do. Is this effeminate or is this not? Now that's a pretty broad thing. And it changes. Do men wear makeup? Well, when I was growing up, not so much. 400 years ago they did, you know, powder on their face to look pale. It depends on the society. Maybe in 30, 40 years, all men will be about wearing makeup of different kinds. Maybe that's fine. It depends on the non-Jewish society. People are a bit nervous about that because all sorts of strange stuff goes on. But here, don't forget, we're not talking about, you know, piercings and stuff like that. We're talking about just what is masculine and what is feminine. When I was growing up, for men to have a manicure was very unheard of. When my parents' generation was growing up, for men to wear deodorant was even, like, unheard of. They wore cologne. Okay, my grandfather always smelled of Old Spice. What's that?
Never had nails.
Now I know Haredish families where the girl says to the man, you're not having nails like that on our wedding pictures. You know, you've got to get your nails done before the wedding. And that's normal. Like yeshiva guys now get their nails done. Okay? Whatever it may be. So then he says, the Gam Yeshlam, alternatively you could say, Da'al Yisrael Ka'amah. No, it depends on what the Jews do. Where the Jews decide to do something together, then the Jews, you don't criticize them. So that's an interesting way of doing it. So what about the first Jews that decide to kind of be a bit rebellious? They're breaching the halacha, but then as soon as a critical mass of Jews do it, then it becomes okay now. Maybe that's it. He says it's not clear. Maybe not. This is why this sugya is so interesting, because it's got these subjectivities. Let's look at the last thing, which is, I'm going to summarize page 9 and 10. The Bach brings down, based on a Gemara, the Gemara in number 32 says that Rabbi Yehuda's wife made a beautiful, thick wool coat, and she used to wear it to go to the market, and he used to go wear it to go to his minion. Maybe he had an outside minion. COVID, I don't know what it was, and he loved this coat. He used to make a bracha, Baruch Sha'atani Meil, Baruch Hashem Shah, I have such a beautiful coat. And there clearly wasn't a problem, even though they both wore the coat. Now you could turn around and say, well, it's a unisex coat, and therefore of course it's not a problem. But the Bach brings down and says, no. The reason it's not a problem is because when you have a clear, practical purpose for wearing the other gender's item, it's fine. To go out with an umbrella. It's pouring with rain. All there is a little pink umbrella with hearts on it. Okay, you might turn around and say, well, real men carry pink umbrellas with hearts on them now. Maybe. Okay, in which case it's fine. But according to the Ran anyway, I'm allowed to take it even though it's a feminine umbrella to run to the car, to put on a coat, to put on a pair of slippers, for a woman to wear a sweater, a man's sweater. I'm cold. Does anyone have a sweater? So the Bach brings down, that for sure is not a problem. Which is interesting, because that brings us back to the Tanakama, which was that the halacha, that you're only doing it so, it's only a problem when you're doing it to be immoral. Yeah, you're just doing it for the purposes of warmth. So too for refuah. Everyone agrees that even if you don't look in mirrors otherwise, you can do it to apply medication, etc. The Bach also said it only applies to an item which is considered an accoutrement or an accessory for clothing. So a girl's bike, he said. If a guy wants to ride a girl's bike, when I was a kid, there was girls' bikes and there was boys' bikes, and they were made differently.
Blue and red.
Not just blue, with the way that the crossbar worked. So he said, according to this, he said that doesn't even get into the parsha. That's a bike. This is not even. So the Bach has an interesting leniency there, and the Taz brings that down. The Shach is not so happy. The Taz was the son-in-law of the Bach. So he reflects his father-in-law. The Shach is not so happy. He says, maybe occasionally you want to put on a sweater because you're cold. He says, but the minute you look like the other gender, he says, I'm not going to allow that. You can put on one thing. You can put on a couple of things, but you can't look like a man if you're a woman, and you can't look like you're a woman if you're a man. We'll get to Purim in a minute.
What about women's sweats?
Oh, we'll get to that next week. That's a whole shir in and of itself. There's a whole question about clothing that's under your clothing. Is there any problem if no one can see it at all? Like socks. I want to put on a pair of women's socks in the morning because that's the only one that fits me, which wouldn't work because my wife's 4'11". But anyway, that's a separate question. The point is that he said that many people say that's fine. But the last thing on number 10, which I just wanted to get into, is this whole question of mitzvahs. What if I want to cross-dress for a mitzvah? And there the Shulchan Aruch says something very interesting, of the Ramah, number 36. Umash shenagu lilboish partzufim bepurim. People wear masks on Purim. V'geva loivesh simlat isha, v'isha kli geva. And women get dressed up as men, and men get dressed up as women. Ein isur b'davar. It's not osa. Ma'acha she'ein mechavnin ela l'simcha ba'alma. Again, intention. It's about your intention he wants to bring down, again, following the ram. And your intention is not for znut, it's for simcha. And then he adds in, v'chein b'levisha kilayim d'rabonon. And you're allowed to wear on Purim shatnas d'rabonon. There you are. You know, go let your hair down. He says, if you've always wanted to wear shatnas on a rabbinic level, Purim is your moment. Again, most of the posts would say, no, you don't start wearing shatnas, even on Purim. The Yesharim da'asa, there are some people that don't like this cross-dressing on Purim. Aval ha-minag kisfara rishona. But the minag is to be lenient. So there, the Bach comes along and says, okay, I'm happy for a woman to wear a sweater when she's cold, or for a man to, you know, wear something to shield from the rain. But on Purim, at Chasnas, this was a big deal at Chasnas, he brings down the Uraim, Rabbi Eliezer of Metz in the Middle Ages, that says that this is what people did at Chasnas for shtick. Men got dressed as women, and women got dressed as men. Shtick is not a new thing. I don't think they called it shtick, but whatever. He says, no, you can't do that at Chasnas. And the Bach says, no, you can't do that at Purim. Why? Because you could bring Simcha in some other way. If I need to put eye ointment in, and I need to look in a mirror, there's no other way I can do it. That's what I need to do. If I'm cold and I need a sweater, I need a sweater. But if I want to just have a good time on Purim, okay, so find some other way to have a good time on Purim. Why do you have to do that by dressing up as women? I see that less now. I mean, the Taz is also unhappy. The Mishnah Brewer is very unhappy with men dressed as women and women dressed as men on Purim. I don't know. When I was growing up, I think a lot more people dressed up as the other gender completely. I've got some photographs from Purim in London of very choshever people that I've not yet got to the stage in my career when I need to use those for financial benefit. But I, you know, some down there in my photo albums, there's some funny pictures out there. But the point is that I think these days I don't see this as much.
No, maybe yes, because today the whole question is about gender identification has become much more.
Right, maybe because it's even more important. I remember I once had a student in a seminary who dressed as a chassid, and she looked the real deal. She, mamash, like, akadei kachta, a group of chassidim grabbed her and started dancing. That already is exactly what they're saying is a problem, okay? Okay, so just to summarize, what do we have here? We have a lot of very complicated halacha. There's two elements of subjectivity, more or less. One is your intention, the other is what is defined as masculine or feminine. Go away and read it again, but there's a lot of interesting things going on. And that brings us to women's slacks, pants, etc., which is a whole parsha of its own. That's next week, which we'll get there. Okay, we'll get there. Be'ezrat Hashem. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week, please God. I'm going to be in England for Shabbos, so if anyone has any regards for England, I'm happy to take them.